Hello, and welcome to the HME Business Podcast. I'm your host, David Cupp, the executive editor of HME Business, your source for news, trends, and insights into the home medical equipment industry. The COVID fight continues. If there's one factor that's defined what's been happening in the industry, almost all corners of it for the past 18 months or so, it's been COVID-19 and the resulting variants that have happened after its initial outbreak. Here today to talk about how that's impacted accreditation is Jose Domingos. He's the president and CEO of the Accreditation Commission for Healthcare, aka ACHC, and also Tim Safley. He's the program director for ACHC. Guys, how are you doing this morning?
We're doing great. Thanks for having us.
Oh, well, it's a pleasure to have you guys. It's been a fascinating topic to watch how this has played out. And I think in some ways, there's been some blessings in disguise. So bearing that in mind, let's dive in. Early into the COVID public health emergency, ACHC began taking some measures to mitigate that. Jose, how did you react, and what were some of the initial steps that you took?
Yeah, that's an interesting situation. I think partially we got lucky, to be perfectly honest, David. Prior to the pandemic, I'm just going to take a step back for just a second. Prior to the pandemic, one of the things that we had within our organization was an innovations group where we were having discussions about redefining what accreditation may be in the future. At one of those events, I gave an example of virtual surveys and what that meant. Now, my explanation of that was a little far-fetched. I talked about having robotic or remote robotic capabilities where you, in essence, would send equipment in. And that sounded more than what I meant it to be. It was really about, you know, do you have a tablet on a stand that has video capabilities, and we do the survey remotely, and somebody basically walks the stand around so we can see the things that we need to see. That was just one example of what I was talking about, virtual surveys. So in our organization, we were already having discussions about what does the future of accreditation look like, never anticipating that we would have this type of event. This caught everybody by surprise globally, right? And so when this took place, and really for about a month after mid-March 2020, we, like everyone else, kind of shut down. I remember it was about March 16th, if I'm not mistaken, we decided for everyone to go home and that we were going to work remote, but that required a lot of definition. It required making sure that we had proper communications and internet access and equipment, et cetera. And so it really took us a month to take care of all of those details. But shortly after that, we took that virtual survey concept of the future and we defined it in a way that it would meet the needs so that we could in fact produce virtual surveys, not with the same approach, not sending equipment into providers' locations, but using video conferencing and using all the things that have now become commonplace for us, both mm-hmm. with external organizations and internally in order to function better and communicate better internally. We now implemented that with our providers. And we were probably one of the first, if not the first in the industry to do that, simply because we got a little lucky that we were already having those types of discussions. And the pandemic really forced us to define those particular steps. And ultimately, we share that with CMS as well. And maybe we'll get into that a little bit later as far as their reaction to our virtual survey approach.
So, Tim, what were some of the risk factors that were driving you to take these measures like Jose was just describing?
I think number one was how can we protect the beneficiaries, number one, right? The patients that we serve, what's going to be the protection there? Because, you know, during this whole pandemic, you still have to take care of the patients home on oxygen or they need equipment or they can't go home. Are the ones, even think about the more critical ones on ventilators. So we had to protect the beneficiaries, but then we also had to look at the safety of the employees at the HMEs that we were surveying.
Oh yeah.
We had to look at their staff, right? How are we gonna, not only their staff, How about their spouses or their kids? We had to look at that. We also had to protect our staff. So how could we do that in balancing act of still getting the surveys done? Because if you remember, CMS suspended maybe accreditation visits for through the PHE, you know, initially, but private payers did not. There was no suspension. So accreditation, if it lapsed, you still had to go out there and do the accreditation. And you can't do it just saying, okay, you're accredited, move on. You know, you still have to have some type of validation of it. So we tried to create creative ways to do that. Virtual surveys was part of it, as well as being in touch with all of our 19,000 plus locations that were accredited to take a look at how best to meet all the needs, plus not letting their accreditation lapse.
Gotcha. And Jose, I think you hinted at this earlier. CMS eventually adopted some of your approaches. Is that correct?
They did. You know, like the rest of us, CMS too, I think, was struggling to figure out how do we proceed from here. And they had meetings with all the accrediting organizations, and we often dealt with a lot of the struggles and trying to figure out, okay, you know, what can we do? What can't we do? At what point can we have in-person surveys again and still do it safely? And so during that time, really over the next year or so, early on, we shared our process that we had defined for our virtual surveys with CMS. And I think a lot has to do with our relationship with CMS. And how thorough our information was. It was very detailed and really gave somebody a script almost for how to conduct virtual surveys. Hmm. CMS ended up adopting a lot of that script because the fact is that we're not looking to simply check a box. And so virtual surveys aren't meant to be easier or a simpler approach to achieving accreditation. We still need to be thorough. And Tim just spoke to that as well, right? We still have to have that validation and verification that providers are in fact meeting the standards that they're being held to. And so virtual surveys, there are particular elements of it that need to make sure that you cover in order to ensure that they are in compliance when it's time for survey. Hopefully they're in compliance throughout their existence, but certainly when it's time for survey, they need to make sure that they're in compliance. And so yes, CMS did adopt our process, which actually made things easy on us, certainly, because we were already doing it that way. But I think it also validated the fact that we had been very thoughtful in the approach that we took with those virtual surveys.
And then some of the policies and procedures that you implemented, you then applied these to your entire organization. Do I have that correct?
We did. You know, Tim also spoke about the fact that we had to be careful to protect patients, protect providers and their employees and their extended families, and then also to protect our own employees and surveyors. And one of the things that we did just as early this past summer is we required all of our surveyors to be vaccinated. I just feel that when you're in the healthcare industry, we're not all of us anyway. I am not a physician, but you know, we certainly have a responsibility to do no harm. And I felt that we have a responsibility to not go into a facility and potentially, you know, be the source of that transmission and then have it shut down one of our providers. We just felt that that was a responsibility we have to take all the precautions necessary to make sure that the providers that we serve were protected and that we weren't the source of a reason why there would be an outbreak within their organization. So we required all surveyors in, I believe, early summer, I don't remember the exact date, to be vaccinated because we felt that it was a protection for our surveyors, but certainly a protection for the providers that we were serving as well. And even today, our surveyors, even though they are fully vaccinated, even no matter what a provider's policies are, we also require them to take additional precautions like wearing masks, et cetera, because the pandemic is not over and we have to keep that in mind. I think that we're so eager to get back to normal that sometimes We're taking steps as a society, we're taking steps that loosen restrictions a little too early that ultimately causes these cyclical events that we see taking place, like variants and those types of things. So we're trying to be as careful as possible to do our part to diminish transmission.
I was going to say, it almost sounds prescient, given that, you know, if you're implementing that early in the summer and then the Delta variant comes along, it's kind of like, well, you guys had the right idea from the get-go. And of course, then we started to see large organizations and of course the federal government with the vaccination mandate kind of, come limping along much later along in the public health emergency. So I think you guys were made the right move. So getting back to that undertaking, how did that pay off for you guys as an organization?
Ultimately, we came out as really the thought leaders on the subject because we took an early position, and we took it because we thought it was right. We thought it was right for everyone involved. Sometimes making those right decisions has consequences, and they can be costly. We were fortunate. I don't know if we lost more than two surveyors having made that decision. And although it was attempted that that would be used against us, ultimately, we're the ones that came out ahead and we're seen as the thought leaders in the industry. And I think that our business has been reflective of that that recognition in the industry. So it's actually worked out quite well for us.
Tim, you're working close with the providers. What were you seeing amongst your provider clients at that time? Were you seeing them taking some kind of leadership in changing their approaches? Because they certainly were at the tip of the spear when it comes to the home care environment.
You know, thanks for that question, David. I think one of the interesting things is that HME sometimes get overlooked for being innovative and creative. It's like a CMS sometimes says, well, HMEs, that's kind of on the lower end. But if you think about it, of the healthcare spectrum, I was saying, but if you think about it, people can't get home. People stay in the hospitals unless we deliver their beds, wheelchairs, and oxygen to them. So now HMEs had to become creative. And one of the things I commend HMEs doing early on is saying, hey, let's reach out. Let's figure out what we can do to still serve the patients that's needed. And some of the creativity of things that we've always done, such as going to the house, setting them up, couldn't be done anymore. So they had to figure out how to do curbside delivery. They had to figure out how to recycle equipment. They had to figure out how to have something delivered to a hospital that wouldn't let you in and train them without the human contact. We weren't used to not doing human contact. Also, some of the innovative things that were also is well done is how to clean and process equipment. All these things were being put into focus because we still had to deliver the care. And so we found companies reaching out to us and said, okay, I'm going to change this. Is this going to hurt my accreditation? You know, I'm going to change my delivery model. I'm going to change my how I deliver oxygen. Am I going to change how I deliver ventilators and set them up, or even simple things as nebulizers and CPAPs? Because they had, anytime you have a compressor, right, that air is just flown out into the environment, and that's not a good thing to spread the virus. So innovation was key to what we saw in the industry. And what the HMEs did to keep their businesses open, especially high contact things such as beds, wheelchairs, oxygen, was truly amazing.
I think that you said a mouthful there, Tim, because certainly HME provider, I think a lot of people would argue that HME providers were one of the groups that kind of saved American healthcare, or at least played a real kind of clutch role in the American response to the disease. So getting back to quality standards, has CMS or any of the payers out there changed their standards when it comes to infection control?
Well, the answer is kind of a yes and no. First off, the quality standards didn't change. All the accreditation based on CMS mandatory for deemed status really goes around what the does for the quality standards. What it made everybody realize is many things we're doing today because of COVID, we probably should have been doing from the very beginning, right? We took a look at it. We were saying, oh, now we're going to take all these extra precautions. We probably should have done that way back. Maybe it would have helped with other transmissions that we didn't think about at that time. So in fact, I think COVID actually helped educate us a little bit more on how to protect our families and the patient. One of the things I want to refer to that I think is very important for a guideline, where standards may or may not have changed internally, and they all did change internally, but actually from payer groups such as CMS or private payers, there, a lot of them refer to a recommendation that came out for the OSHA from Occupational Safety and Health Administration. I want everybody, if they've not done it in the HME world, they need to actually reach out and take a read the Emergency Temporary Standard. And that can be reached at the osha.gov coronavirus. And I'd go to their FAQs, the article itself and a lot of the stuff is, there's a lot of information there. But if you go to the FAQs, it really outlines a lot all the way from vaccinations that we've talked about, all the way from employees' health and safety you should be doing, and how you should be cleaning equipment. One of the things that we have started looking for even more detail is for HMEs cleaning the equipment. You know, one of the things that's outlined in OSHA is, are you using the appropriate cleaning and disinfectant? You know, is it labeled list N in accordance with the guidelines? And so educating the companies on items such as disinfecting are very important, and certainly we've taken a lead on that. And certainly I say the government has too, under Occupational Safety and Health Administration. So go to that website if you hadn't looked at the FAQs and make sure you're in compliance, because they have some creative ways now of cleaning equipment. David, we talked about innovation. One of the things we've seen is all the way from increasing your filtration system in the warehouse, kind of like I've been in the DME and pharmacy industry for a long time, over 30 years. You know, and people go in clean rooms, you talk about how much air exchanges happens. We've seen now companies go in there to decrease that exposure to their employees and to their guests coming in, of increasing filtration system in the hospital or in the hospital or in the home care or in the office, the retail office. We've also seen a lot of people do some cleaning using ultraviolet light, although it's kind of expensive right now, but that can clean and kill most bacteria or viruses that are on the equipment. So a lot of innovation that's still out there from HMEs, but overall the quality standards didn't change, but what we look at is much more detailed, and most HMEs are complying and coming up with their own creative ideas.
All right, so last question, guys. Thinking broadly about the industry, should we have implemented all this before COVID-19? I think when you kind of hinted at this, Tim, you were talking about infection control procedures and things like that. It seems like there are things, there are lessons learned here that you know, are long lasting and don't necessarily hinge on a public health emergency.
Yeah, David, I think you're correct. I'll start off this because I think one of the things we started looking at is about how could we have made our industry better earlier on. And so we think about implementing certain standards. We've certainly done that. Implementing certain cleaning procedures, we've done that. Educating the public, we've done that. But we need to continue on. Early on in this, we started doing Did You Knows and started educating all of our accredited accreditation companies about what needs to happen and what you need to take a look at. And that's all the way from our DMEs to our pharmacies to our home health aspects. So we certainly reacted pretty quickly, but that we need to keep that going. And we did a lot of different in-services, and more people had time to look at the in-services. Although I will tell you, one of the challenges that we many DMEs had is they only had an office. They had an office of 10. Now they have an office of one because everybody else is worried about getting exposed. So a lot of modifications were made. And Jose, I know you have some thoughts on this as well.
Sure. You know, I think David, I think the key here is that neither we nor other organizations should beat themselves up for whether we should have done things differently previously. Mm-hmm. The fact is that we didn't have a pandemic. We didn't have COVID previous to this. So should we have been more attentive to certain things prior to COVID? Absolutely. You know, I think, unfortunately, it takes these types of events for us to make radical changes. When you look at the flu every year, it too, you know, 40 to 50,000 people a year in the U.S. alone die from the flu. And those are big numbers. They're probably not big enough numbers that we don't take significant precautions. But maybe we should. Maybe we shouldn't just overlook those types of numbers even. You know, it shouldn't have to get to 600, 650,000 deaths before we realize that, you know what, things need to change. So hopefully what happens as a result of this pandemic and this emergency is that we learn from it and we do make changes going forward. I think these changes are here with us for a long time. To be perfectly honest, I think that COVID is with us for a long time. I don't think this is about we need to put it behind us and move on. I think COVID will be a similar situation to the flu. I could see us getting a vaccination, if not on an annual basis, maybe on a biannual basis, because there will continue to be mutations that take place and we will have to react to those. So it won't be much different than the flu. Obviously, it's much more significant than the flu because it is the death rate associated or potential death rate associated with it is so high. And when you look at the variants, they're even more contagious that we have to take different precautions than we take with the flu. But it is something that's going to be here and stick with us. And we have to figure out how to manage it and be able to move forward so that we're not quarantined for the rest of our lives. That's not going to be an answer either. So, I hope that what we've learned from this situation carries over and is sustainable going forward. I also feel that sometimes we have short memories and we get a little bit lax when we're not going through the same type of emergency that we've experienced over the last year and a half. I hope that's not the case. I think that there's permanent change that will take place as a result of this. And I think it'll be something that we'll have to manage indefinitely as we move forward.
Yeah. And, you know, if anything, I can picture, you know, during a really bad flu season or something like that, people continuing to wear masks just as a precaution and a courtesy, things like that. It doesn't seem strange.
I think that's a great point. As a matter of fact, over this last year and a half, what you've seen is the instances of flu going down significantly because we were taking precautions relative to COVID, and those precautions had benefits to protecting people from the flu as well. And wearing masks is one of those key protections. I think that masks are in our future. You know, that it's not something we're going to be able to put away. I would not throw away your masks. I think that they're going to have applicability well into the future for various reasons. As you mentioned, whether it be COVID, whether it be the flu, or who knows what the next thing is. I think masks and not just protect us from it, but protect us from each other.
There you go. There you go. All right. Well, guys, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
It was our pleasure. Thank you so much for having us. Always a pleasure speaking with you, and hope that your listeners will benefit from the discussion as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And guys, if anybody wants to find out more about ACHC, where can they go?
I would recommend our website, first and foremost, achc.org. That's the best place to go, and you'll find information on there about our organization and every single one of our programs, including our charity event that we hold every year, which is our charity golf event, achcgolf.com, for more information on that.
Oh, wow. That sounds really neat. Okay. Well, everybody out there, you know where to go. So go check it out. And again, thanks to Jose and Tim for being on the podcast. Don't forget to rate and review the HME Business Podcast. And please, if you haven't already, make sure to click the subscribe button so that you get every new episode. Remember, you keep listening and we'll keep posting. And if you want to stay on top of everything that's happening in the industry, make sure to check out hme-business.com and subscribe to eSource, our weekly e-newsletter service there. If you haven't done so, make sure to subscribe to the print magazine there as well. Again, that's hme-business.com. Of course, you can follow us on social media. We're at HME Business on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, and I'm at Post Acute News on Twitter. Lastly, if you have any feedback, suggestions, or requests, don't be afraid to reach out to me via Twitter. Again, that's at Post Acute News, or you can hit me up via email at D as in David, K-O, P as in Paul, F as in Franklin, at 1105media.com. Thank you all very much for listening. We'll keep covering important HME business topics like our reaction to the pandemic and the procedures and lessons that we've learned. But for now, goodbye until the next HMEB podcast.